There's a ton of stuff to talk about this week. There's a lot of new stuff. It's the end of the year, not quite the end of the month, but it is December, and Apple seems to be kind of fulfilling a lot of promises and pushing out some new stuff and some promise stuff. And man, we have a lot to talk about this week, huh?
Yes, quite a lot of stuff falling in just before everyone goes home for Christmas.
Yeah, and even just like in the last week, like there's a diverse amount of stuff to talk about. The first thing I want to do is a quick mini review of the Smartfolio cover for the new iPad Pro. I've got the Smart Keyboard Folio, but I acquired the Smartfolio to try out, and it's a bit different like than Smart covers of the past, and it's also different than the Smart Keyboard. Like it's noticeably thinner overall, but it's practically like a Smart cover before, like where you used to clip to the side, except now it has back coverage. The Foley part is very much the same, and I got white because it only comes in white and gray, and the keyboard cover is only in gray, and I figured white kind of matches the pencil, and if I'm just like wanting to prop the iPad up with no keyboard and kind of draw on it, there's a different angle that you can get from it that way, and that's quite nice. The only awkward thing about it is when you have the triangle on the back and the iPad's flat tilted towards you a little bit, the pencil is on the magnetic side, is like the bottom, and so it's not ideal for that. But it the overall thinness of the iPad itself makes having that back part of the cover feel like it's like nothing added to the iPad, because the iPad is so thin. It's crazy thin. Like, so I was initially kind of weirded out by the fact that it's the first time since the original iPad that there's no Smart cover, but I think it's a pretty good trade-off for like the form factor and how thin it is to actually have back protection. The price, $100, is not ideal.
Yeah, if you actually think of the price as a it could almost be a positive, because if you look at the previous years, they would sell the Smart cover plus the back case, and then combined would be like $120. So the Folio is actually cheaper than their previous offering, when you had to buy both bits separately and put it together. Obviously, you don't get the flexibility anymore to just have front cover protection if you want the back exposed, but it seems like a decent offering. And I can, when they add all these keyboard options in, I can understand why they want to keep the number of accessories they have lower rather than higher, because it does get a bit ridiculous if you had like a Folio and then a Smart cover and then a keyboard cover, and then you know what I mean? Like, simplifying the line probably makes sense in just terms of elegance and economies of scale.
Yeah, I mean, I think the kind of the automatic thing to do, like look at the iPad Pro, is to think about having the keyboard cover or like an alternative kind of solution for keyboard. But there's something to be said for like using the iPad, even the Pro version, with the on-screen software keyboard. Like, I'm really good at typing with like a couple of fingers really quickly, and like the 12.9 inch iPad Pro keyboard is like big, and there's lots of like tools around it, so it's really useful. And so for that, it's like it's kind of, in my experience, throwback to like my first iPad, which is an iPad 2, of like just like typing a lot of stuff really fast. I'm not sure if I would comfortably like write a story of like breaking news very fast. Part of that just being like the software keyboard takes up part of the screen, so I just feel like more constrained in that way. But it is like I don't feel like I'd be like functionally, you know, broken if I didn't have the Smart keyboard with me, you know, and I was using just the Smart Folio without the keyboard attached to it, and I had to use the on-screen keyboard. Like, it's pretty good.
So. Yeah, that's how I've used mine since I've got mine. Like when I bought the iPad Pro in 2015, I knew I was going into it as like the media device first, playfulness first.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I never saw a real need to go and get the keyboard cover. So I just got into this habit where I never bought it. So for 3 years, I've only been typing on glass, as it were, on the iPad screen, and you can get pretty good at it. I can do like semi-touch typing without having to look down at all, and just the canvas, yes, half the screen gets cut off, but it's way better than cutting off half the screen on like the 11 or the 10.5 inch, just because the diagonal gets bigger, so you still see more on screen at one time. Now, I wish they'd bring the split keyboard back for like thumb typing if you're just holding the iPad up, but I guess I've lived with it without it for 3 years, so we can keep going. But that would really help if they brought that back.
Yeah, there's something to be said too for using the software keyboard, because you've got things like the ability to use two fingers to lay down on the keyboard, and then you've got a cursor, or you can long press on the space bar and do the same thing. But like, that can make you much faster than like reaching your hand out to the screen and like pressing and holding to get the magnifying glass to appear so that you can like precisely move your cursor. So in some cases, I think I'm like actually much faster with a software keyboard. So it's just a matter of like,
and I don't like hitting the screen when it's vertical. Mm-hmm, where it's, mm-hmm. And if you use the keyboard case with the current one, you're required to leave it in that configuration unless you're going to take it in and out all the time. So for me, the trade off of not typing on a physical keyboard, but being able to use like the iPad in the kind of easel lap mode is way worth it.
All right, man. The next thing that happened this week, and it feels like days ago now because so much has happened between now and then, but Amazon announced that sometime, I think the week of December the 17th, Apple Music is officially coming to the Echo line of speakers. And that really excites me. Like, I didn't get to cover this story. It was before I woke up. But having invested in Echo speakers for other reasons, and having one in every room, like one with good sound quality, I am really excited about this news.
You were just kind of lucking out and accumulating Apple Music devices, whether that's in Sonos or Echo or whatever. You're just slowly building up the ultimate any device that can play Apple Music. I've got it.
Yeah, I was in a situation where I was only paying for Amazon Prime so that the kids could talk to the Echoes and have music, because like I would explain to them, there's music on the HomePods. We pay for that. But if we don't pay for Prime, then the Echoes don't do very much with music. And you can pay for Spotify Premium and use Echoes for that. I think you could probably do like Pandora Radio as like your default music service. But then you couldn't call up songs specifically. It would just be like radio stations in general. But the way this sounds to me is that like Apple Music will be an official option for like setting your default music, you know, preference. And when that's the case, you just tell Alexa what you want to play music wise, and it by default like goes to that service that you set up like primarily. So you need then to specify if you preferred it to be on Amazon or Spotify or some other service, but by default, whatever your preference music service is, if it's Apple Music, then you just talk to it and suddenly like you're pulling up Apple Music. And I think that's really, really good news. Apple Music is in a lot of places. It's on all the Apple platforms, of course. And then like with voice control, it's only been available through Siri, and this kind of makes it available through Alexa in certain situations, albeit like maybe with fewer features in some ways. But it kind of matches Apple Music on Android. iTunes on Windows has access to Apple Music. Sonos is like its own thing and it has Apple Music. And the only thing that really surprised me here is like the whole versus HomePod thing is like separate. I think it's totally fine for Apple Music, that used to be Beats Music, to be on all these different platforms. But it kind of looks at Echo as like a big enough platform to be worth the investment. Like maybe it was really easy to do. But like when we see these smart speaker numbers come in, like say, you know, HomePod's last, but then we look at the whole pie and it's a very small pie. Like there aren't crazy amount of Echo devices out there. Like, you know, especially
there's like 60 million total.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is not zero, but it is not.
It's also not Android or Windows.
Yeah. Like the HomePod's probably sold what? 3 million. So yeah. The $350 HomePod has got like a 5% market share of this market that's been around for several years now.
Right.
It's obviously dominated by a market of, you know, the $30, $50 stocking stuffer kind of dot kind of product, that Google Home Mini.
Mm-hmm.
Like the smart speaker revolution is definitely happening, but it's by no means over or so dominant. It's not like Windows and Mac where right. You'd have, you know, 95% market share, and that 95% also represents hundreds of millions of units every year. Like we just aren't there yet.
Yeah, but make no mistake, I mean, this isn't an Echo versus HomePod thing. This is like the service here is Apple Music. It's $10 a month. Like HomePod is $350 once. Apple Music is $10 to $15 a month. And now there are even more customers. Like in theory, you could be a PC, like a Windows, an Android, an Echo family, and you could use Apple Music everywhere, you know, throw in Sonos and like never have an Apple product in that mix, and you can do Apple Music everywhere.
And if Apple had been first to the smart speaker game and had the product range already instated, mm-hmm. and it had, you know, 80% market share, like what the its big Amazon competitors do at the moment, then maybe they wouldn't need these integrations so much, right? Like if the HomePod and the HomePod Mini and the HomePod, whatever you want to call it, already dominated the marketplace, there's probably a stronger argument for them internally to get away with it. But as it stands, as the services division, I think they can clearly see that only being on one smart speaker is a limiting factor to people that want to play music. And you have a lot of people at the moment who have iPhones, and they probably even have Macs, but what do they have? They have Echoes in their house just because inertia and an install base. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's like sacrilegious or stupid for them to have done this. I do hope that the hardware team of Apple Incorporated can catch up in actually offering a better range, more than just the one $350 speaker.
Yeah.
And do like the $99, $199 competition, because then like the market share stuff would also be more interesting. There actually are direct corollaries of what you can buy on the Apple world versus everything else. But that's, you know, ultimately ancillary to the, we want to sell more Apple Music subscriptions. What devices do people own? Let them listen to music on the devices that they have.
Yeah, there will be some differences here too. Like you cannot do Apple Podcasts through Alexa on Echo speakers, but you can do that through HomePod with Siri. That's like directly on the HomePod. And then you won't be able to do things like AirPlay 2, where you send audio from your iPhone or iPad or Mac to multiple targets of AirPlay 2 speakers, whether it's a HomePod or a Sonos speaker, or the Libertone one that I reviewed a few weeks ago. Like all those things can work talking through AirPlay 2. You know, you won't have that stuff, but I think you'll have the same benefits that you have now with music services and Echo, which is you can set up groups. It's way less flexible and way more like manual setup required, but I just have a single group among my Echo speakers, which is everywhere, which is every speaker in the house. And I can say play music everywhere and it'll play on all the Echoes. You could do like combinations like West Wing or Right Wing of the Home, whatever. But so that part, like it won't be nearly as flexible as using Siri and AirPlay 2 with HomePod and Apple Music. And you won't have things like you can't tell Alexa to play a podcast, you know, and you can't AirPlay from your phone to it. But you can do some pretty useful things like the groups I mentioned just now. Also, you can say to a specific Echo, pair to my phone or connect to my phone, and it'll prompt you to pair over Bluetooth like one time. And then after that, the connection has been made. And every time you say that, whether your phone in your pocket or like across the room within Bluetooth range, you tell Alexa to pair to your phone and it connects to it. And that's pretty useful. Like if you're already playing something on your phone, like a podcast, for example, then it can come through the Echo as a Bluetooth speaker without you doing anything with your hand. So that's quite nice. They've also, like the only Echo that's not great for music, in my opinion, is the original first and second generation Dots. Those are the more like boxy topped ones that are circular around the edges, all of them from like before this fall kind of. And they still sell those for, I think base price is like $39, and they've been selling them for like $29 or $19. And those are not great for music, like, unless it's like for a kid or something. But the new Dots, the third generation Dots, are like pretty good for just like, you know, like kitchen music or like background music. You know, it's not HomePod quality, but like it's pretty good. And then when you get up,
and it's a tenth of the price of a HomePod as well.
Yeah, they're tiny. It's like they're really compelling, and they look like little squished HomePods too. So like Amazon has been very, you know, open about just like taking the design of like these smart speakers and putting it in there, because the old Dots were ugly, and the new ones look kind of, they look fine. And then there's the current generation of Echoes, the big tall cube one, or you know, like canister shaped one went away. There was a second version of it called Echo Plus, but that's gone now. Now there is the Echo Dot. There's the regular Echo, which has been selling for like $70, and I think maybe now it's $100 after the big deals went away. But like that's the default one, and those are really decent. Like again, they're not HomePod, but like in some situations that can be better. And then there is Echo Plus second generation now, which looks more like most like a HomePod. And that one I think is $230 usually, somewhere around that price. And that one is like, I don't think it's so much better than the Echo that it's worth spending time with. But it is, you know, unlike the original, you know, canister shaped Echoes, it is a music speaker, like definitely just like a HomePod is.
Yeah, the landscape has changed so much since that slide at WWDC.
Yeah.
They had the Sonos system, and then they had the Echo system of like the two separate worlds. Like yep. Since that, we're what, a year and a bit on from that now. That is not a fair representation of the landscape.
That was before the
Echo lines are much more competitive. It's just raw music playback as well.
Yeah, and we knew at the time, like all Apple isn't the only one that can combine a good smart speaker with a music service. You know,
yeah.
And I'm glad that like there's no barrier here anymore. It wasn't on my radar like a possibility, but I'm glad it's there. There's also go ahead.
Yeah, and they use the music skill. They're going to use it's going to be as a music skill, which is actually a relatively new Echo API. Basically, Amazon saw all these separate music services like Spotify and Deezer and Pandora all doing things on the Echo as like their own skills. So what they did in about September time is they standardized on this kind of common language, so that now in the Echo app, all your music services can just be in a group and you just choose what you want. And I believe the way that the Apple Music integration will work is that for the group, you can just choose your default service, so that mm-hmm. when you say play this album, it knows to play it on Apple Music if you've chosen Apple Music. Yeah. You don't have to specify the brand name every single time like you would with like a Siri kit thing on iOS.
Yeah, yeah. That's really compelling. And like the fact that Apple Music will be there, like right now I use the Amazon Prime music service and it's only on, it can be one station or song or whatever playing on all the speakers as a group, or it can be one Echo, but it can't be two different songs on two different Echoes at the same time without paying a little bit more money that I don't want to pay. So I don't do that. And I don't pay for Spotify or anything like that. So I've not been able to have like my, I mean, it's just been like a generic service of music that I can pull up and, you know, mostly for the kids. And then I do stuff with the HomePods, and like for the first time, I'm really excited about this. For the first time, I'll be able to have my favorites mix. So like have music I imagine that I've uploaded myself, like live concerts and stuff like that, play through the Echoes, just because it's an iCloud music library. So I'm really excited about it. There's also, I'm not sure if it's out yet, but there's Echo Sub, which you can, this is pretty new for Echo, pair two of the same size Echo speakers and generations together. Like you can do two Echo Dot through generations, or two Echoes together, or two Echo Pluses together in a stereo pair. I mean, that came after HomePod stereo, I believe. So it's pretty new, but like it's true stereo left and right. Nothing fancy about it. And the one thing that's nice about that is, you know, our big complaint about HomePod stereo is that when you talk to Siri on the HomePod stereo pair, only the most recent HomePod that you've touched the top of lights up and the other one does nothing. And I tried Stereo Echo this week, and both of them light up as you would expect them to.
What an incredibly 21st century technology. A stereo pair means that both of them light up. I thought we would get to Mars before that would happen.
It's really comforting, like because they both like they responded. And I also noticed that whenever you change the volume manually on one Echo within a stereo pair with the buttons to do that, both of them light up. Because like you get a blue ring for Echo listening to you, and you get a white ring for volume changes. And if it's like 25%, it's a quarter of the ring. And the other Echo in that stereo pair does the same thing. So, as you know, I like HomePod for a lot of different reasons. Like, you know, it has access to my iCloud reminders and HomeKit control, Apple Podcast and messaging and all these different things, you know, through Siri and Apple services. but I'm a big fan of the not $350 a piece Echo speakers, and they keep getting better and better and stuff like this. Like Apple is boosting it even more. And until there's a line of HomePods in different price ranges, including like $50, you know, this is a compelling thing. Like it's worth investing in, I think. Most HomeKit products also work with Alexa. You just got to manage skills separately and rooms and everything, and it can be a pain. But if you're, you know, curious about it and you don't mind investing time and like you kind of get a kick out of tinkering with these things, you can kind of live with both things and do pretty well. So
Apple Music and assuming that the music skills integration isn't going to be artificially limited by Apple, which it doesn't seem like it's going to be. It seems like they're going to implement the full protocol that Amazon lets them. That will actually embarrass the HomePod further because that enables things like integration of music alarms, so you can wake up to your Apple Music mix, which obviously you can't do on the HomePod because the HomePod doesn't even give you a choice of ringtone. You get one alarm tone, and that's it. You can't wake up to music. You can't wake up to a different ringtone other than its normal chime. And that's something that the Echo infrastructure lets you do as of these new music skill APIs.
Yeah, you can say, wake me up to Christmas music at 7 a.m. And it'll do just that. It makes perfect sense. So, if anything, maybe that'll push the HomePod team to have to do more. Because, and then the Apple Music team, I'm sure that there was pressure for Apple Music to be in more places from that team because that was Beats Music before and their service and their whole goal was to sell subscriptions and to limit them on platforms limits what they can do. Now, I'm not sure that this means that we see Echo or Apple Music on like Google Home, for example, because, go back to that big pie chart we looked at a minute ago of Echo dominating, HomePod being a little slice of it. I'm not sure where Google Home sits on that, but I don't think it's like, massive either,
Yeah, I mean, Google's definitely second. It's like Amazon, Google, then the HomePod far, far, far down the list. But I don't think Apple's going to be Netflix where they will literally make apps for any platform, even though they have 10 users. It's going to be more controlled than that, even if it is there's a difference between being on everything and being on just your own stuff. Like there's a line there where they're not on every home media streaming speakers, but they're on Sonos, like the leaders. They're still going to kind of retain some of that control by being selective.
Yeah, and before now, like the Apple Music on Windows is because Apple Music is built into iTunes, and iTunes is already on Windows. And it would have been weird to have iTunes on Windows without Apple Music. Like, it'd be like a different version of iTunes. And Apple Music is on Android in part because Beats Music was on Android too, and it replaced it. And they could have just like taken away Beats Music on Android and had no Apple Music on Android. But like then you'd be limiting, and the work was already started, I guess. And you already had people working for the service that knew how to build that app. And
I do think that is going to continue to be part of their services business, like Android apps. For instance, Texture, the news app, has not been removed from the store. So that is definitely a thing now. It's not just like a one-time, it's not like a one-time exception for Beats Music. I think that's going to be, they're going to have a suite of Android apps in the not too distant future.
Yep. And then Sonos did require some engineering that meant there was a period where Beats Music went away, which was on Sonos, but then, I don't even know anymore if Beats Music was on Sonos. It was so long ago, but iTunes has been on Sonos for a long time. And then Apple Music, came to Sonos like within a year of launching. It was like late in the year, I think, but it was like within 6 months or so. And it was a big thing. And so I could see a future where like once every year or two, Apple tackles a new platform that takes some work, but they get there. And then versus like being there on day one, they add Sonos 1 year, and then the next year they add Echo, and the next year they add Google Home, or whatever is available for them to expand to. They're kind of on the web now as like an embedded player, right? But not like how Beats Music had like a Flash-based website that you went to and you could stream, and like you can go to iCloud.com and access your photo library from any computer with the internet.
Yeah, right now you can go into these websites that integrate the Apple Music web player and play stuff through there, and you can even log in and play full songs, not just previews like we talked about Genius integration a couple of weeks ago.
But you don't see like the web version of your favorites mix and custom.
No, you don't see your own library,
right?
Even though they have some of the APIs technically can show a lot of your library if the website like made that, and there are even some like GitHub projects that have made fake iTunes libraries essentially using those same frameworks. And I think eventually that MusicKit stuff will result in AppleMusic.com, because that might be the ultimate answer to what you do with like iTunes and Windows and stuff when they start breaking up iTunes on the Mac and they do like a native music app on the Mac. I think it's very unlikely they're doing a native music app on Windows, but if they have like a web player, it's close enough.
Yeah. Well. In summary here, I highly recommend if you're like smart speaker curious, the flat round Echo Dot that looks like a smashed HomePod. those are regular price $50. You can find them for like $30, and in many cases these things like get bundled in with other products, so you can get them for free. And then the $100, between $70 and $100 Echo in the medium. And like, if I don't know, you got to be really curious to want the most expensive Echo and all of that. I can't wait for this, and I can't wait to report back to see like how it performs on Echoes and if there's any weird limitations or not. I think it'll be a good thing. So
I think chances are it'll even have more features than Apple offers you on the HomePod.
that's an interesting case. This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Zugu Case. And together, we're giving 9to5 Mac Happy Hour listeners the chance to win Apple's brand new 12.9-inch iPad Pro. Zugu Case makes Amazon's highest-rated iPad case for previous models. And now, the company is launching a brand new version for Apple's new iPad Pro called the Muse Case. Available for both the 11-inch and 12.9-inch models, the new Muse Case is a thin yet super protective case that also includes a built-in magnetic stand and even more improvements. The really great thing about the new Muse Case is that it actually allows Apple Pencil charging without having to cut a big hole in the case that exposes the iPad. Not only does this look better visually, but it can also prevent scratching the area around where the new magnetic Apple Pencil connects to the iPad Pro. So check out the giveaway entry on 9to5mac.com to enter our 12.9-inch 2018 iPad Pro giveaway, and check out the new Muse Case from Zugu Case to support the show. Our thanks to Zugu Case for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, tell me about this iPhone XR situation. I know a few weeks ago there was a rumor we talked about that maybe the XR would get cheaper in Japan through carriers, and there's been development there, right?
Yep, so it did. Shocker, the news is right. Docomo announced, and they kind of kicked off a little wave. They basically gave people $100 off the price of an iPhone XR over the course of a two-year contract, because in Japan they're still very much on the old, like, subsidized model, where the carriers subsidize the phones, and then you subscribe for that whole duration. The $100 off is, you could think of it as equivalent to like buying the phone for $650, although it's not quite like that, because in Japan the phones are more expensive to start with. So you're not quite getting down to those levels, but you can. $100 is a significant price drop, right? Sure, like, there's no two ways about it. For a brand new model of iPhone, it's quite rare to see $100 off for any iPhone, even 2 years later. Like, it is not common a garden place. So that was definitely like a, I don't know if you want to call it a warning sign or a worry or a flag, but definitely corroborating evidence to the kind of burgeoning storyline of this latest round of iPhone launches hasn't been as gangbusters as Apple might have expected.
It wasn't that in Japan Apple looked at iPhone XR numbers and they said, we're selling too many of these, we have an excess amount of profit, let's cut this for the consumers. It was that they probably need to boost sales some.
And the rumor was that it was particularly bad in Japan,
right,
versus other regions. Like, people were not necessarily not buying iPhones, but they were buying the, like, people that didn't have the money to buy the XS's were just carrying on buying iPhone 8s, which is not ideal, because obviously to keep ASPs high, you want to be buying the newer products, which are more expensive. At least it's not as dire as them not buying iPhones anymore. Like, I don't think anybody's arguing that. It's just a lot. People are worried that the mix is going to be heavily skewed toward the legacy models, which don't make Apple as much money. This is then kind of doubly shown up by what Apple has done since then in the US, which is boost trading value. So if you trade in like an iPhone 7 Plus, you can upgrade to an iPhone XR for $450. They're basically adding $100 on the trading, on the give back trading value. And in case you didn't need any more signs that they wanted you to do this, they have not only been sending out emails, they also have the front page of Apple.com, the homepage, right now has a massive banner over the top, which says limited time, get an iPhone XR for $450. And it is incredibly rare for Apple to put prices on their homepage. Like, it's just not very stylish, and they very rarely do it. But this is one of the times when there is indeed a dollar sign on the Apple homepage.
Mm-hmm.
Again, probably indicating that they have some stock to shift of at least some quantity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's hard to know like how bad it is. Mark Gurman at Bloomberg had a report this week that said Apple had reassigned some of their marketing team to focus on boosting iPhone sales versus doing marketing for other projects.
Mm-hmm.
And his source claimed it was like a fire drill, as if, you know, something serious is happening. We're doing a shake up. It's hard to know the reality, but it is not, I would say it's not all rosy. And honestly, as a watcher, it's kind of more interesting to see Apple like on the back foot, like actually having to work to do,
yeah,
to do sales rather than just, oh, we're just going to sell millions of these without doing anything, and let's just put our feet up. Like, it's kind of interesting to see how they adapt to the, you know, weaker market conditions.
Yeah, it's like the product is great, but then the marketing thing, you can't just trust it to be great and sell on its own in this situation. They've got to do some more things. Like, you've got a comparison in your story of an old screenshot on Apple.com where it said iPhone XR, brilliant, period, in every way, period. And then the new version of that was iPhone XR, all screen design, period, longest battery life ever in an iPhone, period, fastest performance, period, studio quality photos, period. Like, they really got specific on how it was brilliant in every way. Like, they went from this like super general positive to specifics in that one example.
Yeah, and also we saw over the weekend them give away iPhones for the first time ever on the Ellen show.
Yeah, so
they gave away iPhone XR to the whole audience. Again, the kind of marketing gimmicks that you rarely see Apple do. And in that obviously like pre-recorded ad script, they also mention longest battery life ever, which is interesting because the battery life argument, everyone kind of spotted as a big deal when in the tech press, but Apple themselves were pretty hesitant in mentioning the battery life specs officially, because I think they didn't want to make the XS and the XS Max look inferior.
Yeah,
but now we need to sell 10R. Suddenly, the best battery life of any iPhone is on the homepage. So there's definitely some tweaking going on how they're positioning it. And brilliant in every way is really like a meaningless phrase. Like, you could put that on every year of iPhone today and you wouldn't have a clue what was new, whereas now they've actually like buckled down more and, you know, actually putting bullet points of compelling features that people remember. Like, and battery life is a huge deal. My dad has had an iPhone XR since it came out, and I just asked him like casually at the weekend, are you still happy with your phone? Any weirdness? He's going, yeah, I love it. The battery life is great. Like, on top of the design changes, on top of the speed, he upgraded from an iPhone 6, so the speed changes are very significant. Everything was second to, oh, the battery life is way better. Like, that just sticks in people's minds.
Yep. I really wonder how this phone gets marketed in a year. Like what the revision to it is. Because surely they don't just leave it the same next year and like have like new versions of the flagships, but they may that's the rumor, at least, is that they maintain these three phone sizes, and people seem like the press reviews for this phone were excellent, and you know a lot of people in your family who bought this phone like more than usual, and I've got some friends who bought it and it's
The Verge called it the best phone of the year. That was their top recommendation. So everyone seems to be bumping it up.
Yeah,
but it doesn't seem like the sales are coming through. Like, it seems in reality people are buying a lot of iPhone 8 still.
Yeah, and it's not quite the same as like when the 5C was around, and everyone's assumption was that it won't sell like flagships do, where it's massive in the first quarter and then it kind of like levels out for the next you know, three quarters, but that for the 5C phone, it's like last year's phone, you know, actually. It just has new colors to make it look nice, and people will buy it throughout the year. And I think that reflected in how people bought it was that, like, you know, I saw more 5Cs in the wild, like, toward a year later when it was kind of a two-year-old phone, really, because, like, people were just buying it not because it was the newest and greatest, but because it was available at a price point they liked whenever they were ready to buy a new phone. That, like, the $10 is kind of funny. Like, maybe it will be that way, but Apple certainly wants to sell a lot of these phones right now, not, you know, in three quarters from now or, like, you know, later on. So it's different. It's different. One other thing, the whole $449 you know, price, and then that's when you trade in a 7 Plus to get $300 off of the price tag. I was on the MacBook Air page, and they show there you can trade in, I'm not sure what Mac, but you can trade some Mac in for $1,000 off of the price of the MacBook Air. So using the same set of rules, the trade-in value is the final, like, is credit toward the final price. They could advertise the MacBook Air as $299 right now. Asterisk with the trade-in of a specific Mac, like, whatever. It's probably like a 15-inch MacBook Pro, you know, from like 2018. But some Mac is worth $1,000 to Apple, and you can buy a MacBook Air for $1,300, so $300. They could. But obviously the focus is on the iPhone right now, so that's not the case. But it's interesting. I mean, $10 it's a cool phone, so Apple wants to sell more. Let's talk about some new things Apple released this week. So we have a lot to get to here, starting somewhat related to the 10R. Actually, is the clear case back in October?
Finally,
yeah, back in October, it was October 12th. Reported that Apple would release its own clear case for the iPhone 10R, and this was in part from a photo that we received before this story ran of the blue iPhone 10R with a clear case on it. And then there was that mention in the Canadian press release for the 10R that mentioned a clear case would be coming. Fast forward.
That was still so random how they just had these mentions in these non-main demographic geography press releases of, oh yeah, we're going to do iPhone 10R accessories. But then all the people that got embargo units would ask about it, and no one from Apple would tell them anything official. And then the October event, November event came around, and then again, nothing happened, and then this week, ta-da, the iPhone XR case is on sale.
Yeah, we go from October 12th to December the 5th between seeing it, and it just shows up on Apple.com for sale, and what do you know, it's exactly the photo that we received of the blue XR is like one of the examples. Now, this thing is $39 in the U.S. I think people are like already receiving them to review for press, but you can rush order it and have it available on Friday. I saw people that had Monday deliveries move to Saturday, so like they're probably going to be in stores on like Friday or Saturday. But it's exactly what we saw before, where it's a clear case, so you can see the color of the 10R, and it's got like nice clicky buttons with the little pads between the two buttons to make it more clicky. It's got an open cutout on the bottom, unlike like 99% of other iPhone cases that cover the bottom, which makes it easier to do gestures, especially with no bezel at the bottom. And like dock it and everything, and just in general, like it looks tighter fitting and like less like a big balloon than like every other clear case I've ever seen. So, yeah, I've seen people like gawk at the price, $40 for a clear case, but I think there's something to it. Like there's, you know, it doesn't cost Apple that, but like you can pay $25 and have like a way worse clear case than this. You know,
yeah, plus, like the one that my family have got, absent anything available from Apple at the time, was one that is about $20, and no question the Apple case would be nicer and probably twice as nice just in terms of fit, sleekness. The buttons on the one that my family's got, which is like a spec case, is the buttons feel like jelly. Like locking the phone or adjusting the volume, it's like you're pushing a button on the other side of the world. It feels so disconnected from the physical hardware. And Apple's buttons on their cases are so nice. Now, does it, like you said, does it cost Apple anywhere close to $40 to make this case? Of course it doesn't, but it doesn't cost Apple $40 to make their silicon cases either. But that's just the price of a first party accessory, and if people value like getting the quality, the best cases you can, then you should probably buy the Apple cases. They're not cheap, but stomach the price and you will have a better product than the ones that are half as much on Amazon.
Yeah. I mean, we've not seen these yet in person because they're only coming to stores tomorrow and Saturday, but a few things about it, like besides what I've already mentioned, there's no logo on it at all. Like you just rely on the Apple logo to come through the case because it's clear and you can see that. But like most other cases have like their brand on there and then maybe even like some texture that isn't even clear. It's like clear, but a pattern.
I mean, that's what the other, that's what the other cases on the Apple store at the moment. If you want to, if you want to buy the other Apple recommendations, they're like brick patterns, like little rectangles all the way down the back of the quote unquote clear case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, if they made this case for the 10S and 10S Max, I would totally buy one. Like even if it's just to show off, like, you know, to see, to protect, but also see like the nice space gray finish, like that's cool. Especially the gold color. It's like, look, I've got the new phone and you can see it. Just like you see it and appreciate it. The only thing about clear cases that kind of, you know, get to me is like, we'll see how the yellowing does. If Apple has come up with some magic solution that doesn't yellow over time.
The description on the Apple store does not fill me with confidence because it says it uses TPU, which is the material that everyone says yellows, and it doesn't seem like Apple's using anything different here. So I wouldn't hold your horses on that one. I don't think they made it $40 because they're using some completely alien new material that doesn't distort its color. I don't think that's the case, unfortunately.
Yeah, they say we use a blend of optically clear polycarbonate, so that's like the plastic part of it, and then flexible TPU materials. And then it says, so the case fits right over the buttons for easy use. On the surface, a scratch resistant coating has been applied, not only to the exterior but also the interior. And then they mentioned it works with wireless charging, as you would expect. So there's something to it, but the thing about it that for me, and I have to see the one in person to kind of judge it, but like, a clear case shows you precisely where the phone itself ends and then where the case begins and also ends. So you can see exactly how thicker it makes your phone. Like you can see in your hand, oh, this thing is actually, you know, that thin, that narrow, but because of the clear case on it, I can see exactly how much thickness it adds to it. And that's way more exaggerated on like competing cases. Apple seems to be pretty slim in that regard. But I think I'd still have that, look at it and be like, oh, if I just take this case off, it's even thinner and narrower and nicer. But I don't have a 10R, so I won't be buying this case. But I did think it was neat that the packaging for it, I think the letters for clear case are rainbow colored, with the idea being it's whatever color phone you put in it. Because, you know, they can't like color match it to the phone that you're buying because it can be any of the colors. But and they can't have like, you know, invisible letters, can't be clear. So they use every color to spell out the word clear case. So it's a nice touch. Something only in the packaging, you throw it away after you're done.
There's your $40 worth of value.
Indeed.
I will say my iPhone X, which I've had since launch day, I spent however what ridiculous markup they charge for their leather case on the iPhone X. And it's what, 2 years on now, and I still can't find a case that is as good as the Apple leather case was.
Like they're so nice. They really
are. Just nice. The buttons feel so good. The open bottom's really nice for the gestures. I actually think that'd be less of a factor on the 10R just because you get that slight extra bezel from the screen anyway. But on the iPhone 10, like, it just letting your thumb be go straight off the edge of the screen is so much nicer. Like, it's hard to fault the price when I can't like point to anything which I'd say is actually better. Like I've tried other leather cases and companies always send some over every now and again, and it's usually the buttons. Like the fit and the finish of the buttons, just it never feels as good as the Apple cases. They just never do.
Yeah, and it took Apple a while to get to like where they are right now in terms of quality, but nobody's copied them in terms of design or implementation quite like Apple has. And their leather cases used to be trash. You'd use them and they'd wear out within a couple of months, and their buttons didn't feel great, and they've changed them year over year until now they're actually pretty good. They're expensive, but they're pretty good. Actually, I think like the silicone and the leather cases are not outrageously priced. If you want to look at something that's an Apple case that's outrageously priced for the iPhone, it's the Folio case for the Max. Because I think it was like around $100 for the 10S size, and I think for the Max it was like 130 or something like that. Like it's some crazy number to have the wallet case, you know, with the Folio cover. So I'm sure they're very nice, but it's also very big and very expensive.
Yeah.
9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Ops Genie, now from Atlassian. Downtime is awful. You've lived through it, I've lived through it, and it's no fun. It doesn't matter if it's at home or at work or wherever you experience downtime. When a system you rely on goes down, it immediately throws a wrench in every part of your life. When it's worse is when you're the one responsible for fixing it, and you don't have a plan to manage your way through it. That's what Ops Genie is for. Ops Genie gives your team the power to respond quickly and efficiently to unplanned issues. Are any bad issues ever planned for? I think we all know how that goes. Ops Genie helps you notify the right people through a smart combination of scheduling and escalation paths that take into account things like time zones, vacations, and holidays. Obviously, you want the right person notified immediately, but if that person's not available, you want the next person notified without having to wait only to realize that the first call person isn't actually on call. This is where Ops Genie's smart magic comes into play. It knows because you've told it previously, back when times were calmer and you could think through it all. Ops Genie keeps track of all that for you, and when problems inevitably occur, Ops Genie is there to help. Also, now that Ops Genie is part of Atlassian, it opens to all kinds of integrations with things like Jira, Amazon CloudWatch, Datadog, New Relic, and more. That's what Atlassian is all about. They integrate well with their own solutions, but they also integrate with other popular solutions too. Check it out, opsgenie.com, to sign up for a free company account for up to 5 users. No credit card required, no time restrictions. This is a fully free account for you to actually use, not just try. That's opsgenie.com. Never miss a critical alert again with Ops Genie. Our thanks to Ops Genie by Atlassian for sponsoring the show. All right. Also this week, Apple began selling the 18-watt USB-C power adapter that was previously only available with the 2018 iPad Pro. It sells for $29. This was like first rumored to be bundled with the new iPhone XS and XS Max, but that was an incorrect rumor. It was actually with the iPads. And then there's this period, you know, for a month and a half where you can't buy it separately. But then you could buy like higher speed USB-C bricks. Price wise, like this is pretty good, and especially if you like you can buy this and just use it for your iPhone if you wanted to, and that's kind of what I'm doing because with the one that came with my iPad. But it was just kind of, you know, it's
but like Apple's other USB-C chargers, it doesn't come with a cable. You only get the brick.
Yeah, just
be aware.
Yeah, like you this is a situation where you can definitely find a similar solution for less money and like functionally get the same thing. It's just, you know, if you want Apple's charger for its design, for example, then now you can buy it separately. If you need to replace your iPad charger or if you want to use it on your iPhone, you can do that.
And hopefully it will turn up in an iPhone box one day.
Yeah.
Bundle it in, please.
Yeah. If you get the 29, 30 watt USB-C brick, I forget the price of that off the top of my head, like maybe it's around $50. But that can charge your iPad like so fast. The day I was watching a video, a movie on my iPad, and I hit 5% warning because I'd been like watching video for a little while. And I just plugged in and kept watching video. And it was like 45 minutes later, I think. And I checked the battery and it was like 50%. It's like really fast from my expectations, because it wasn't like the iPad went to sleep and was just like quietly charging. It was still like eating through like a task that would be eating through battery, you know, showing video at like, you know, high volume, high brightness on a big screen. It's really, really nice. So this, my 18 watt USB-C charger lives in my kitchen. And I just like, because it's the fast charger for the iPhones, like if I'm in the kitchen and I'm going to like leave soon, I'll plug up my phone, charge it, you know, or if I have company over, they can plug up their phone and get a pretty quick charge. Then like for like bedroom charging overnight, I just use wireless stuff. So since there's no like rush on that. But nice that this is out there now. We also got like every software update this week that's been in beta for feels like 2 months. In some cases, I think actually it's been 2 months. This includes iOS 12.1.1, tvOS 12.1.1, macOS 10.14.2, a HomePod 12.1.1 update that we didn't expect because there's no beta for that. And then as of today, a day later, watchOS 5.1.2. So we've covered most of what's in these betas, like the FaceTime UI getting fixed with the flip camera button and live photos coming back to one-on-one calls.
Thankfully. I've been burned by that so many times. Well, I've been burned by family members FaceTiming me and messing it up so many times in the 2 months it's taken for it to actually come out.
Yep. And the way Apple described it in the release notes is one tap to flip between the rear and front facing camera during a FaceTime call. One tap, that's it. So thank you.
Which isn't true, though, because if you actually wait a few seconds, the card disappears. So it's technically two taps.
Yeah.
but it's close enough. It's close enough.
It's more than 10, or fewer than 10.
Yeah. Live and, photo capture. And when you're flipping the camera, the thumbnail preview does not get covered up. That was the biggest problem with the old design. It wasn't even like it getting hidden by another button, is that you didn't have the visual confirmation that you'd actually done it. So you'd press flip and then nothing on the screen would change because it would all be covered by the blur, by the background blur of the card. Whereas now you can flip and see the video actually change from the front to the back camera.
And then the way they described the live photos is live photo capture during one-to-one FaceTime calls, like as a new feature. Now this was like iOS, all of iOS 11, and then it went away with iOS 12 because they were making room for group FaceTime calls that weren't there at first. And you can't do it on group FaceTime calls. It's just one-on-one. But I love how they describe these like new features in the release notes, but they're really like returning things that went away or made worse.
Yeah, and live photos are it's exactly the same as the old implementation.
Yeah.
But just to be aware, you both have to consent to allowing live photos, and depending on your old default settings, they might actually be turned off. If it says you need to enable live photos in FaceTime to use this, just go into your settings, find the FaceTime thing, and then find the live photo toggle and turn it on. And then and both sides obviously have to be able to do that if you both take pictures of each other. And then it's like taking an animated screenshot, and you don't get any of the interface chrome in the way. So it's a really nice feature, and obviously I think not as many people used it as they probably, because it wasn't there, because it's relatively recent, it didn't cause a storm when iOS 12.0 came out as much as it would have done if it had been around for a bit longer before it got pulled. But it's a really nice little feature that is like perfect Apple, like sentimental value. You're just chatting, you know, with a significant other or whatever, and you can just tap pictures all day long. Like it's, and it will tell them that you've taken a picture, so you can't be creepy and stuff like that. It's well done.
Yeah, and it's like you said, it's way better than a screenshot. You don't get like the home indicator in the bottom and all the UI. They also mentioned notification preview using haptic touch on iPhone XR, which is something that we caught in the beta. So like so far we're 3 for 3 and like having a story about it from the beta period. They mentioned dual SIM with eSIM for additional carriers for iPhone XR, XS, and XS Max. We also kind of knew to expect this because carriers like AT&T and Verizon in the US didn't support eSIM at launch. And they had specific reasons, like what was AT&T's complaint?
AT&T said that visual voicemail would stop working when you added two lines, because I think it would only show your voicemail from one line, which is a bit stupid. It would give you a notification to say your second line had voicemail, but you could never actually look at that voicemail. So, right. And that affected loads of GSM carriers, so they all put the brakes on it, because it was supposed, the eSIM launch was supposed to be 12.1, but then all these issues quickly came to a head, so basically every US carrier put on the brakes and said, we'll come back when Apple does a software update for it.
Right. And so as of this launch, AT&T officially supports dual SIM on the new iPhones this year. We got a memo obtained from Verizon that says December 7th for them, so that's Friday this week, so not soon after. And then their issue was something to do with like 2G speeds, right? You were telling me?
Yeah, Verizon, this would affect any CDMA kind of provider, is that if you would put that in the second SIM, the eSIM or physical if you're in China, you would drop down to 2G speeds on that SIM. You wouldn't be able to get LTE. And especially Verizon, that's problematic because in many places in America, they've actually turned off the 2G now and the CDMA network stuff, so they only rely on LTE. Right. So if you can't get LTE when it's in the slot, your coverage would be really bad. And again, that is addressed in this update.
Yeah, nice. Now, we knew to expect that for the most part. I don't think we really caught on to this. The option to hide the sidebar in news on an iPad in landscape orientation works as advertised. I think the button looks funny, like where they put it, just kind of floating there.
I don't want to start on Marzipan rant again, but I think part of the reason the button's in a funny place is because they are limited in what UI stuff they can do in the current Marzipan world. So because that button doesn't appear on the Mac version, I think there are any limited UI options they have to implement it on the iPad.
It's the same button as the Mail app has on the 12.9-inch iPad Pro. It's just placed differently and looks.
Yeah, because in Mail, that little like expand collapse button has like this natural navigation bar header that it can reside in. Mm-hmm. Whereas in News, it's kind of like a headerless app because it directly just goes straight into top stories. So if the sidebar is not visible, or like the dismiss the sidebar button cannot be in the sidebar, obviously, because you could make it go away.
Yeah.
So they're kind of. It kind of just plonked there at the top of the screen. Like it's not the nicest, but I guess it's a feature.
Yeah, that people definitely wanted it because like the sidebar, my sidebar has a lot of different news sources that I've tried for Apple News. I don't use the app a lot, but I do like to see things that I don't see like on Twitter or other places. I want it to be like unique, and so I've got like a lot of publications, and so it's like a very busy sidebar that I don't really need to tap into a lot. So it was. Definitely something that you needed to be able to dismiss it. Now you can toggle on and off just with a little funny little button. And then they mention real-time text, which is RTT, real-time text, when using Wi-Fi calling on iPad and iPod Touch. In a moment, we'll talk about the Mac update. This also comes to the Mac. But this is kind of an accessibility feature that was been on the iPhone since 11.2, but now it's available on these other devices that can do phone calls by Wi-Fi calling. So that's a nice addition.
That's actually kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, it is an accessibility feature, but what it is live typing. So obviously in our current, like if you take iMessage and you write a message, you don't see the characters that people are typing until they press enter and actually send the whole message bubble.
Right.
Well, what RTT is it's real-time texting.
Google Doc.
So it's like Google Wave. Yeah, or like Google Docs. It's you see character by character as it's being typed out, and I would love that if they could eventually bring that to like the mainstream in messages. So I was one of the few people who used Google Wave, not thinking it was going to be a serious communications platform, but just in like the beta period and stuff, and it was kind of like a test thing, and it had a billion complicated features, but the core essence of you type and character by character appears on everyone else's screens was really, really nice. Like, it was real-time instant messaging. It wasn't like, bubble, wait. Like, it was good. So if they can eventually bring that to everyone, I would welcome it. And obviously, they can make it a toggle. Like, you don't have to use it if you don't want to. But I think it speeds up a lot of, you know, chat, like, text communication.
Yep. And then also in the release notes, they mentioned some bug fixes and things. They also mentioned support in mainland China and Hong Kong for HomePod, which this was in the release notes like shortly after we ran a story where we discovered on the website in Hong Kong for HomePod that they had a label that said coming in early 2019. So we saw from that HomePod's coming to mainland China and Hong Kong, but not Taiwan, and that's not been available yet. So now, as of this update, it's supported. So if you have a HomePod there now, it should work with Chinese language, and it wouldn't before. And then early next year, it will actually be on sale in mainland China and Hong Kong. And then also,
and notably, Amazon and Google don't have their smart speakers in China yet.
Yeah, so that Pi we mentioned earlier, it'll be all HomePod. Right now, and then HomePod LEDs illuminate during group FaceTime calls. Like that's a very much polished. But it's like you can do a group FaceTime call from an iOS device or a Mac, and you can have the audio come through the HomePod. Well, now it will light up if you do that. Say that you know that it's active. So, okay, I didn't know it was missing, but now it's there. On the Mac side of the updates, this is in macOS 10.14.2. It's the same thing with RTT, real-time text for Wi-Fi calling. And they have a fix for third-party AirPlay speakers with iTunes. There's some issue there. And then the big thing is
the premiere feature
is a bullet point that says adds a menu item to news for opening a story in Safari. And this is like closing the sidebar on the iPad in the news app. This is like people ask for it and now it's there. Where if you're reading a story like on 9to5Mac and in Apple News from the 9to5Mac channel within news, you want to open it on Safari and like do something with it on Safari, you know, have it in your browser instead of the news app or save it or something. Well, you couldn't do that before, I guess. And now you can, but like they say, adds a menu item for news. It's not a button on the news app, and it's not where you'd guess it'd be, which is in the share sheet. It's in the menu bar under it's in the file. Menu. It like I looked for it, and I started it from right to left. Like help, nope. Window, nope. View, nope. Edit, no. File, there it is in file. Under file, you have love story, dislike story, save story. All of which have keyboard shortcuts, and then open in Safari, which has no keyboard shortcut. That's weird.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. Like, I updated 10.4.2, and I opened news. I went to the intuitive place where this feature would be, the share sheet, because that's where it is on iOS. If you want to open Safari, it's in the share sheet. It's one of the actions. On the Mac, no. And then I begrudgingly slowly move my mouse up to the menu bar, thinking, oh great, it's a Marzipan app, I know how bad this is gonna be. And then yeah. I was like, please no, please no, please no. I clicked on the file menu and there it was, and I just kind of like sighed to myself.
Yeah, people are coming around to this idea that the Marzipan apps are not good.
I don't know how people have to come around to this. Like, you don't. It's not like a thing you have to research. You can just open the apps and they'll just tell you that they're bad. Like, I don't know why it took people so long. We obviously had like the big episode on it a few weeks ago, and it finally seems like now people are like, oh yeah, these Marzipan stuff isn't good enough. It's like, yes it is. It is not good enough.
And then also the tvOS side in 12.1.1, we don't get release notes, and they do a splash screen for new features sometimes and just updated like as they see fit. I don't think we got that this time, but I think what we see in this update is the zero sign-on feature that was promised at WWDC as part of tvOS 12. I think it's there in the code, and then all you need now is someone to support it, and I think it was Charter Spectrum that was going to be the only like launch provider, and they're not quite there yet, I don't think. But from what we're hearing, around the 13th of December, they're going to release their live TV app that's already on iPhone and iPad, where you launch the app. If you're on the same Wi-Fi network as the service provider, then you get access to like the live, like the cable channels that you'd see on a cable box through your TV, but like through the iPhone or iPad. This, I think on the 13th, we'll see this app come to the Apple TV. And it will use zero sign-on as like the back end to make that work. Coming. Maybe they'll make some press about it. We'll see. I don't have that provider in my area, but my mom does where she lives. And I tried it and like just the app, and that's really cool. Like, I didn't have my iPad with me yet, but I had my phone. I just downloaded the app. There was no login required. Like, she didn't have a login. She doesn't do the online billing stuff. So there was no account that she'd made. But just by being on her Wi-Fi network, and she had no clue it was even, like, working like this, and I showed her and she was impressed. I was like, look, your phone is now a TV or your iPad, and, like, coming soon to the Apple TV, and you can also AirPlay it in the meantime. So it's pretty cool. It's
a pretty neat feature that very few people will be able to use for a long time.
Yeah, if you do have it, I mean, it does kind of make your Apple TV another cable box. And like in her situation, she's billed by the box, and so she has one for the living room, and then in the bedroom she didn't pay for one, but by having an Apple TV in the bedroom, she'll then have that same, you know, benefit of like you need to watch TV in that room. So I think that's coming. And then today, we're recording on Thursday, Apple released the watchOS 5.1 update, and the way that we saw this story was our friends at The Verge, who previously ran a story saying that it was out just by mistake, I'm assuming, in like the 5.1 update or so, I think they accidentally published their embargoed story on it coming out today. So
yeah, they're always on the verge of being right.
It's close. So they published it, they deleted it. Tweetbot sees all the tweets. It saves all the tweets, even if it get deleted, because the Twitter API isn't that great. The tweets don't get deleted from Tweetbot as they do from TweetDeck. So we could see the tweet from – it was 5 a.m. my time in Central Time. So there the tweet was. The link was dead, but Engadget saw it and covered it, not knowing it was pulled. They just had the whole story, like, and then via The Verge. So like, there's enough here that – and we also just like 99% assumed it was coming the day after the other releases because it wasn't there then, and we knew it was going to be in this version. And about 4 hours later, the embargo lifted and like lots of publications had the story. There were some video interviews with Apple people and examples of it being used. And then like several hours later, the update actually comes out at the usual 1 p.m. Eastern time. And if you live in the U.S. and you're of a certain age – you can try it.
You have to be, what, 22 years or older?
Yeah, that we didn't know. We knew that you need to be in the U.S. There was some fuzziness around if you could use like region changing to access it. Turns out we ran a story back in October saying that we believe that's the case based on code. But as of launching it, there's more restrictions. Like I think you need to have bought your device in the U.S.
They banned down the hatches, so now your Apple Watch has to have been bought the US model. So you have to have the US model of Apple Watch.
Yeah. Yep. So that's kind of
expected. Sucks for me.
It's too bad for you. You're not being able to take an ECG from your watch. But if you do have an Apple Watch Series 4 and you're in the US and you bought your watch in the US, you update your watch and then you run through the health app on the iPhone and you do some consent and you see some tutorials and then you can eventually go back to your watch and take an electrocardiogram from the Apple Watch Series 4. And it's really fast. I mean, it's a 30-second countdown. It's just like you launch the app and it's ready for you to like touch the crown. You touch the crown. It begins to take an ECG, shows your heart rate. It shows like the rhythm on the screen, shows the beats per minute in the corner and a countdown. And if you pull your finger away from the crown, it starts over. And it's almost like a fast countdown back to 30 when you do that, like because the app's like natural state is to be ready to go with a 30-second clock. And it's quite neat like how it animates back to 30.
Yeah, it like ticks back up.
Yeah, like super fast. It's like vroom. but you know, if you do the ECG and you get to the 30 seconds is complete, then it gives you your results, which is you have it's normal or there's concern. And if it's normal, then they let you add symptoms if you feel funny. Like you recorded an ECG because you felt funny. You can add a symptom from the watch app and like record what it was. And if you're done, then you're done. Once you finish, back in the health app, you've got access to that data. You can share it as a PDF, you know, which we knew. It's pretty polished, except like the only thing I saw that was weird was they show your iPhone version, you know, software. They show the watch version software, and then they show the watch hardware version, but it's like the internal reference. So it's watch, no space, 4,4, which is like meaningless.
What doctor is going to know what that is?
like what user knows what that is? But it's yeah, exactly. Doctor. But other than that, it looks like really well done and used to. You needed a subscription service and a special band that you needed to use with an app that wasn't from Apple. And now as part of the watch is really impressive. And the idea is eventually this is not just the U.S. It also goes to other countries. It's just regulation and getting approval for that. And it took a little while for the U.S. even to be announced and rolled out. And, you know, ideally before the Series 5, maybe it'll come to your country in more countries.
I am honestly doubtful. I reckon it's going to be a long time.
Yeah. Well, it's best to manage your expectations in that way. So.
Yeah, I think it's going to be at least a year, unfortunately.
Yeah,
I'll be happily surprised if it turns up, but
yeah, the app itself, like it's super simple. It tells you know it has the advice of like how to position yourself, and then if you're doing it precisely right, then it will let you know that it's not going to detect a heart attack if that's your concern. So you've got your expectations met there. The app icon, you noted on Twitter that it's a white background with a red line.
It's another white background, yeah.
Yeah, which on the OLED watch face, like, you know, come on, why do that? It would be so much better if it wasn't that way. But it does have a complication on the Infograph face, and I think the other faces too, which looks really good. Where it's a black background and it has like a little fade to it where it comes in. It looks really nice. The only thing is like, you know, this is like one of those insurance kind of features where you want it there when you need it, but you don't need to use it all the time. And like Apple even says it somewhere, don't play with this like too often. Like when it's new, you're going to try it out, but like don't just obsess over the ECG app. It's there when you feel funny and you want to check, you know, this as a first reference.
It probably shouldn't be like the biggest complication on your screen all the time.
Yeah, I guess I feel like you've had issues and this is your peace of mind that now you have an ECG on your wrist, then the complication becomes useful. It's like the moment
the problem with that though is that if you get diagnosed, they tell you not to rely on the watch ECG because it isn't accurate enough.
Yeah, well, it's the step between you going to the hospital and not, I think, you know. But, so, yeah, I mean, there's something. It's between nothing and something.
Yeah. for me, honestly, the bit that's more exciting is the background irregular heart rhythm notification stuff, is available on Series 1 through Series 4. So you don't even need the latest hardware model. Again, it's US only because it's, you know, legal laws, medical, blah, blah, blah. But that, you... With the ECG app, you have to intentionally open it and stand there for 30 seconds with your finger on the crown. The irregular notifications happen passively without you having to do anything, just like the low heart rate and the high heart rate stuff. Over time, it will just analyze your heart rate pulses, and if it can detect signs of atrial fibrillation, it will just pop up a notification saying, we think you have AFib, maybe going to consult medical attention. And only, I think, that will be the one that is more effective in actually getting people to know what to do, because this feature, it comes out, people would do it the day they get it and then never touch it again, right? It's the over time constant monitoring thing that is actually going to do, I think that'll be the thing that ends up in like the news headlines, because we've seen countless times before now where the low heart rate notifications have prompted people to go to the doctor and get, you know, proper diagnoses. And I think that is also what will happen with the irregular heart rate stuff. Like the ECG app is fine, but because it's the proactive alerts that really make the difference in like day-to-day life, because humans are just too lazy to regularly do the ECG themselves. So the notification stuff, the proactive, I'm tapping you on the wrist, there might be a problem with your heart, are the way more effective, you know, part of this story.
Yeah, so we had high heart rate alerts for a long time from Series 1 and on, through a software update it was added. And those have been very effective at people getting the nudge to go see a doctor, and then they find out that something's going on, and they felt as if they were saved by that intervention, that the watch is what pushed them to go to the doctor, and then they found out something much larger. And then just through watchOS 5, they added the low heart rate alerts, which is you can set if your heart rate is within the, I think, under 40 or in the 40s, or you can set it to be in the 50s or 60s, like below that threshold for 10 minutes or longer, then you'll receive an alert that happened and it gets saved to the health app. And then the brand new thing is the irregular heart rate detection in the background, which there was the Stanford and Apple partnership for the Apple Heart study, which you just sent your data to Apple and Stanford and they studied it. And that was download an app and opt in and do all the consent stuff. And then it would send the data to them. And then there was no like alerting you as it happened. But I think it would eventually, like if they flagged it, then you could follow up with like the doctors by FaceTime and some of the things, and go, you know, they seem like a kit to like measure yourself. And it seems like a very fast turnaround. They turned that into an actual feature that works on the watch for everybody. Like, as you said, it's in the background if you're in the US. And if it's I think that if you get that alert that you have an irregular heart rate that has been detected, then I think like the step one thing to do is like launch the ECG app and like take an electrocardiogram.
Yeah.
And then that's what you can share with your doctor. But like, you know, and if it flags you there, then like you go to the hospital, you know, you go see your doctor, and then you can show them like, look, I captured on the spot. These are the results, and then they can use that. So it's baby steps, but like it's way ahead of like what other what else is out there right now in a consumer product. So and it was promised, and now it's here. Now the FDA also gives you new complications on the infographic face for Apple apps. Let's see. These include Find My Friends, the Home app, Mail, Maps, Messages, News, Phone, and Remote, plus the new ECG complication. There's no podcast app complication, which I'm a little bit upset about.
Yeah, that one's stupid.
Yeah. There's also a new alert if you're doing an activity challenge between friends. If you hit the max number of points in a day, which is 600, then you get an alert that you've done that, and there's a nice animation that goes along with that. That's very nice. Now, something that's new that we hadn't seen in the beta is, let's see how they put this, enables direct access to supported movie tickets, coupons, and rewards cards in wallet when tapped to a contactless reader. Can
this
you explain
is
to
similar
me what's going on there?
This is similar to the student ID card.
Yeah.
Thing that we talked about a couple of episodes ago,
okay,
where you don't have to seek out the wallet app and seek out the voucher to use. You can just tap as if it was an Apple Pay transaction, and it will find the right pass to activate and send across the wire.
I love that. It sounds really limited right now, by the way they put it, but I love that it's supported and you know, eventually it gets everywhere, I suppose.
Yeah, and that means you don't have to double click or anything. You just hold it near the reader and it can just go straight there.
Yeah, so I look forward to that being everywhere, so it's like not guesswork. Like, it feels kind of guessy right now.
Yeah.
So, and then the last thing they mentioned in the early sense is manager availability for walkie-talkie from Control Center, which we discovered in the beta process. So,
and still frustrates me because I have an odd number of items in the Control Center. Thank you very much, Apple Incorporated.
Yeah, I have a friend who recently discovered the walkie-talkie app, and he wants to use it a lot. And I like iMessage. Like, you send a message that you can read somebody, and no matter what the condition is, it's there to reference later. It's you can have Siri read it to you if you need to. That's really nice. Walkie-talkie is very problematic for like anything important. Like, just a situation, I was shopping and it was too noisy to hear the message, so I said back over walkie-talkie, I couldn't hear that. And then I text them, I couldn't hear you. And then they didn't send anything back for a while. It was like, oh well, because it wasn't important. But and then there's the whole thing like where it has the yellow dot on the watch face, and that alone is, I'm not going to leave it on. So I don't know.
I kind of think some sort of message history for walkie-talkie would be welcome. Like, the current implementation is very much copy the analog world as closely as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But realistically, this is a digital product. They could save the last message locally on your device, so you could replay it if you wanted to listen to it again. Especially when it's just coming, emanating the noise at your wrist. Like, even if you're not distracted by it, you might just be doing something idly and kind of miss the first half of the message anyway, just because you're just doing something else and you're not always on, or your brain's not always locked onto, I need to listen to every audio sound that comes in my head. So a replay feature, as crazy as and technologically advanced as a replay feature may sound, the current walkie-talkie app does not have any of that stuff. So
they should
consider that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, when we originally discussed the walkie-talkie and the Apple Watch and how it's implemented, we heard from people that use different forms of walkie-talkie in like work environments in practical ways. And I will say, like, whenever you've got your rhythm down of like back and forth, it's neat. You know, it's the real-time aspect to it is like neat. It's just like, I think there needs to be like some etiquette around it, which is like, let's walkie-talkie. It can't just be out of the blue. And it needs to, you know, you need like some understanding. It's almost like a FaceTime call. You've got to consent to answering it, you know, and that's kind of the handshake there. But in some cases, like, I'll even like message someone like, can we FaceTime first? So I'm not just like pushing it on them to answer a FaceTime video call.
Yeah, because calling is intrusive, and literally speaking out of your wrist is even more intrusive.
Yeah, and I will say this is a friend who like my main form of communication like first is messaging, and like if it's super important then I'll call. This is a friend who regularly will make a phone call to me. He's like, it's my age, it's like another generation. But he'll regularly call me in the middle of the workday for like something that could be a message, but it's just like his normal is to call. So I think there's some relationship there between like how you approach phone calls and like how walkie talkie is for you. But now you've got a toggle, so it's a little bit easier for me to turn it on now without launching the app. So it's nice. And then there's a number of things that we're – well, there's not as many things as we're awaiting now. Like the big thing is air power. I mean that's the big thing. It's like we're not just awaiting air power to come out this year. We're awaiting Apple to announce some – update to it, whether it's air power is delayed on a Friday evening, you know, to bury the news, or air power is indefinitely delayed, right? Yeah. Or air power is coming in January or February, you know, whatever they want to say. We think it's like way more likely now at this point that the announcement is air power is something other than available to purchase right now.
Yeah, it's definitely bad news, air power, not available now, air power.
Yeah, I mean, like one scenario is the Friday before Christmas Eve and Christmas Day is you kind of get a 4-day weekend of like a news lull at that point, where it's like no one's paying much attention. You get the initial headlines out there, and then like no one's watching the news. You know,
for reference, Apple announced the HomePod delay in the middle of November.
Yeah, and I think they thought they could do it sooner than. Yeah, the HomePod delay is like they thought we think it's AirPlay 2 that caused that, and they thought they could get AirPlay 2 done sooner than they did. Like maybe they could do it in January, and then come February they gave up on that idea and they said we're gonna release it without AirPlay 2 and stereo pairing, and we're just gonna release it as is, and that, so it doesn't bode well for like a pending AirPod launch or AirPower launch, I don't think.
Yeah, Quo had a report over the weekend saying that he expects the AirPods wireless charging case to come first quarter of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of, it's hard because we don't know for sure if the AirPods case is Qi compatible or only AirPower Mat compatible.
Yeah, Apple
today Apple has only shown it on the AirPower Mat.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know that it's there, but they call it the wireless charging case. They don't necessarily call it the AirPods case for AirPower. So it's unclear, but if that's destined for first quarter 2019, maybe the AirPower Mat is first quarter as well.
Yeah. So Apple uses Qi on the iPhones, and they don't use like standard Qi on the watch. You can do some funny things and make it kind of work with Qi, but like, it's not easy. And the thing with AirPower is it needs to be like some intelligence to it so that it can talk to the other devices, and the iPhone has it in its software, but like the charging case would need the intelligence like built into the charging case firmware, I guess. Some kind of communication there. And then some people will tell you that like the case is too small to work with Qi. And I think they're just guessing. I don't think anyone really knows. Unless you're-
I don't think that's true. Like, you can find Kickstarter projects that will sell you AirPods cases that work with Qi today.
Yeah.
Like, and they're not Kickstarter projects that are shipping in 2 years' time. They're like shipping now. You can find them.
They're
just very ugly. And yeah. If you want to be really technical, yes, they are like a millimeter bigger than the current cases, but that's only because they're adapting onto the existing cases. I don't think that's the they haven't done that because that's the technical limit of the Qi size.
Right.
You can do Qi on tiny things. Like the Apple Watch is essentially Qi, just with some very minor adjustments on top of it. Mm-hmm. Like, and the AirPods case is much bigger than the Apple Watch back crystal.
Yeah. Yeah. So this Quo case that has some like new design things about it, which some of these make sense. Like, you mentioned the hinge has changed, and I guess if you're wirelessly charging, like maybe having the metal hinge back there is not ideal anyway. It's like metal gets hot. Maybe.
Yeah. And then you said the hinge had to be reinforced because of tighter design requirements, like mm-hmm. probably due to like heat distorting. That warping it.
Yeah.
He also mentioned all new design AirPods for 2020.
That's all he said about it.
But that's all he said about it. So yeah. Unlike most quote reports that actually have details, this one was pretty... It was like, well, okay.
Yeah. I mean, that was my reaction. It was like, what was a Sunday report? And it's like out of the blue, random, and not many details.
Yeah, he didn't name one specific feature for the 2020 AirPods. So we've heard the speculation of better water resistance, Hey Hello Siri, trigger activation. Those kind of rumors have been floating around from like Bloomberg and other places, but Quo would not be drawn on what is new in the 2020 revision other than it's an all new design.
All new. I hope that means that it's like the in-ear earbuds that Apple used to make and that they're doing that as a version because that'll meet my needs.
You know that's not what it means.
It could be. I don't know. It's an all new design. Like, what else are you going to do with these little buds? There's not much to them.
If they only do in-ear model, I would not be happy. So I like the model as they are now, the open sit on the edge of your ear canal type design. I know they're like controversial, but the classic Apple earbuds, AirPod style is exactly what I want. Like, I don't, the in-ear ones for me are just so annoying and like scratchy and like, oh, it's like, I don't mind them offering in-ear options, but please don't make that the only choice. Like, I wouldn't want that at all.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Well, the thing with Quo's report about the wireless case coming in the first quarter, like the first quarter could mean anywhere between January and March, and that could be like the end of March event. You know, it's like here's an event, here's a bunch of new stuff on the website, and that could mean that Apple like pivots their original plan, which they've never said, as to make the wireless case Qi and work with any wireless Qi mat. Or it can mean that AirPower is coming by the first quarter. You know, I think that part kind of depends on what Apple says in the next few weeks, because I think it's highly unlikely that we finish out 2018 and Apple just doesn't acknowledge it. I feel like that people would make a lot of noise if that were the case. And they don't
have a record of doing that. They always release some sort of statement about stuff that's not come out.
They're so good at it.
If they don't fulfill their own promises, they say something. Even if it's we do not want to discuss it, they'll at least say that gives some sort of acknowledgement about the AirPower situation.
Yeah, maybe they need a roundtable where they have a whole orchestrated PR. You know,
the AirPower mat just went into a thermal corner.
And so too ambitious.
We've started again, and we'll have a brand new AirPower mat in early 2020.
I don't love the going back to Steve Jobs open source FaceTime share with the Sanders bodies line. It's so long ago, and it's like we'll let it go. But I think that's the only thing of like never a follow up to it at all. And there's so much history like about what happened there.
The worst delay of the Steve Jobs era was like the iPhone 4 white model.
Yeah.
But that was resolved, you know, eventually. 10 months later. It was like 11 months after.
So yeah, we got to be close though, you know, and my only concern is as we get to the end of the year, you know, this is the strategy, right? Is that like Apple knows that the last week of the year, like people are kind of away. It's the week of Christmas and people are traveling and taking off. And like, for example, our plan is the last episode of this year, we record before the last week of this year for that reason. And, that's like, so if they announced it on December 21st, for example, we wouldn't discuss it for 2 weeks, you know, and that's the strategy of like burying the news in these ways. So I'll just come back with like a solo episode where I just talk about AirPower's delay. It's like an emergency update on the feed. But I've been before, you know, this quarter of the year, I was pretty optimistic that like Apple had given this preview and it wasn't ideal that it wasn't in the beginning of 2018, but that it was a sneak peek preview and it wasn't like as much of a pre-announcement as like HomePod was with a release day, a release month, you know, and everything. But like after the iPhone event, it was just like downright obvious that something's not right here. And now that we're in December and we've had two events this fall and no mention of it, I'm just waiting for that tension of like what's going on to be released with a delay message or an indefinite hiatus message and not a now it's available, you know, update. Although, last thing I'll mention is that we did have a report today from Guy Rambo at 9to5 Mac that he found an icon for what is undeniably a smart battery case for an iPhone X looking phone with a vertical camera cutout in the back and a little lightning port inside. So, you know, we have the clear case now. It's here. We have one more case to wait for that hasn't even been announced, but it's just like in this code we found the icon for. Maybe and the first smart battery case wasn't that in like a December.
That was December, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe they got some big plans. The Air Power is coming out this month. Smart battery case is going to be unveiled with no announcement previously. Clear case came out this week in December.
Just, yeah. So many Apple accessories just happened all at once.
I'm optimistic. Scratch everything I've said before. It's coming. AirPods coming this month.
I really want AirPods to come. I think it'd be a cool product. Expensive.
Wouldn't that be nuts at this point, though, if it did come this month? Like, no one expects it anymore.
I mean, the AirPods shipped on the 19th.
Yeah.
So, we've still got a fortnight.
Yeah. The month is young. All right, well, and if nothing else, we've got Apple Music coming to Echo on the week of the 17th, so a couple weeks from now. And I don't think we mentioned this part, but, like, it's just Echo speakers. It's not everything with Alexa. Like, there's thermostats and smoke alarms with Alexa and all kind of things. Sonos has Alexa. We don't think that Apple Music gets that access yet. That maybe
no, the press release explicitly says Echo device, Echo devices. Yeah.
So. It's all kind of features like drop-in and the announcing features that like show up on other devices eventually, but not like in the first 6 months or so. So that's not going to be there, I don't think. But like, you know, week of the 17th could be Echo, Apple Music, Air Power, iPhone XS battery case. By the way, I would buy one of those immediately. I never had the one for the iPhone 7 or whatever it was for, but I would totally buy it just like used it when I need it for a XS, even for a XS Max. To get that 10-hour battery life is what you get. All right. Well, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You can give us feedback at happyhour@NFIMac. You can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach. Benjamin, you are?
BZA Mayo.
And we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.